You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Stupidity. Home of the greatest media mind ever to walk the planet.
Okay, so here's the deal. He's a true icon in every sense of the word.
He's loved and feared more than any being to grace this planet.
There's two guys. A man with a voice that sounds like Barry White and Beyonce had a Jewish baby.
God himself would pay $39.99 for a cameo. Fact of the matter is, you are about to embark on a transcendent experience that can only be described as psychological nudity.
This is Stugatz, and this is Stupidity.
Here we go, Jim.
Tony!
All right, welcome into Stupidity. Billy and Mikey A are here. Billy Walters is going to join us. He's the Michael Jordan of gambling. I'm really excited for this. Billy, you seem to be excited for Billy Walters. He is just going to spill the beans on Phil Mickelson. I can't wait for this.
That's kind of mean. I mean, it seems like Phil.
What do you mean it's kind of mean?
I mean, Phil lost what? He gambled like $1 billion? It seems like a problem at this point.
Oh, Phil. But yeah, you said it's kind of mean that Billy Walters is using Phil Mickelson to sell a book?
I wouldn't say such a thing.
Well, Chris Russo did. Yeah. I mean, he said that.
Yeah, well. Anyway, where are you? You're in Buffalo?
What was that? What kind of transition was that? Why are you sprinting away from this
conversation? A hard transition.
Do you feel like Billy Walters used Phil Mickelson to sell books? I'm just asking you a question.
We'll find out when we talk to Billy, I guess. Yeah.
You think Billy's going to acknowledge that he did?
No, but I think maybe Billy will sell the book and then we'll be like, oh, yeah, you know what? No, that wasn't what happened at all.
All right.
You know.
Okay. I'm in Buffalo. I'm just outside of Buffalo in Rochester, New York, to answer your question since you didn't answer mine.
Well, I have another question for you. I have another question for you related to the first one.
Sure.
If you had a spill the beans book or situation, whose beans would you be spilling?
Oh, wow. Lebatard's?
I mean, yeah. The Leb of beans?
He doesn't have a lot of beans, though, Lebatard. I mean, he doesn't, you know? Beans to spill.
If he did have a lot of beans to spill, though, you wouldn't sell them. You wouldn't say them now. Like, now you say there's no beans, and then when it's bean spilling time, then you spill the beans, right?
Well, I'll figure out the beans once I get to bean filling time.
Got it.
I was going to say, you got to start selling this now if you're eventually going to do it. You got to say, hey, listen, there's some beans. Like, I'm not going to talk about it. And then you wait, and then you keep building it up, and then you eventually release the book.
All right.
And there could be no beans, but as long as everybody buys the book, what do you
tease the beans?
All right. So there are a few beans. I'll work them out. Okay. I'll get to them. But I am like, it has to be someone big that people care about, right? Like, Billy Walters wrote about a lot of other things, but the thing that everyone's latching onto is Phil Mickelson because he's interesting and people want to know about his gambling habits. You have to spill the beans on someone that people are interested in, right? Like, I can't, like, what's the point of spilling beans on, I don't know, Hank Goldberg? No one cares. He's passed away. He's gone.
Ouch.
What do you mean? Too soon?
Yeah, a little bit.
He died, Billy.
No, I know. I'm aware of it.
Who would you spill the beans on? Everyone?
I don't know. I don't think I'm a bean spiller.
Oh, you are.
Am I?
I feel like you would. Listen, desperate times call for desperate measures. If you had the beans and you needed money and you needed to spill the beans, you would spill the beans.
Well, why are you putting me in this position? Why do you have me in desperate times? What are your intentions here? I don't understand.
What I'm saying is that perhaps you're correct, okay, that you are not a bean spiller. But if you were desperate and needed the money and you had the beans to spill on somebody, I feel like you and just about anyone would spill those beans. That's all I'm saying. Mm. Don't be offended.
That's fine.
It's fair, I'd right? Spill
the beans. Would you?
Yeah.
On who?
Whoever would get me the most money.
Okay.
I feel like if you're going to do it, you got to go all the way. You can't be like, oh, I'm going to protect this guy and I'm going to protect this guy. Like, if you're going to do it, you just got to go full heel. And just
name the upper level management guy at ESPN you would spill the beans on.
I feel like Mikey's strategy.
Billy Belge out.
I feel like Mikey's strategy of you need to start like teasing for build up and then there's nothing is exactly what happened with the UF doc, right? Where it was like, oh my God, like we're going to get a documentary on this team that everybody's wanted for years. What was really going on there? And then nothing was really revealed.
Right. Well, I mean, this stuff happened. They just didn't reveal it. You're right, Billy. It's a good point. Yes. The UF documentary is so disappointing. It makes Urban Meyer look like this great football coach. And Tebow, who already looks good, like he doesn't need, but Tebow looks great. Like the legend of Tebow. But really, I think the disappointing part is that, man, you know what Urban Meyer is at this point, and somehow they made Urban Meyer look good. None of the off-the-field stuff that you wanted is in that documentary. It was very disappointing. Urban would spill the beans on everyone, right?
It's not a documentary. It's a highlight reel. That's what it is.
And those teams were great. They were fantastic. They were talented. They were exciting to watch. They were in the national championship conversation every single year. Tebow, as I've pointed out several times on our show, was kind of like a halo over that. No one was paying attention to the crap that was going on everywhere else because everyone was just focused on Tim Tebow. And so that, in addition to what he did on the field, is why he is such a legend in college football. So Urban Meyer, classic bean spiller, right? I mean,
he's the rare bean spiller that has more beans to be spilled on him, I think, than on others. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Urban is defending many people. I think people are kind of defending Urban in the sense that, like, in a bean spilling situation, Urban has more things that should be spilled than he has on other people, I would think.
Right. But I feel like Urban has a lot on a lot of people, though. I do.
But what they have on him is worse. So, like, what's going to happen there?
It's a staring contest. Who's going to blink first?
And also, like, I feel like the beans that he has, people care about less than the beans on him.
It's mutually assured destruction. You can spill the beans on Urban, but he's probably got some stuff on you.
That's my point.
We're both going to go down. Yeah.
Listen, he might not be a bean spiller, but what he is, Billy, is a bean collector. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's got beans on everyone. And if you release the beans on Urban, Mikey is right. He is going to come back with 10 times the fury and release the beans on you. You know?
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So did you.
Rochester.
Did you. What?
Oh, sorry.
Did you ever as a kid have magic beans as a toy? I feel like that was a thing earlier in the world. No?
No.
I feel like that was one of those things. Magic beans is one of those things that you'd send away for. You see, like, in a magazine, you send, like, whatever, $1.50, and they send you, quote-unquote, magic beans, and it was just, like, whatever they were, like, actual beans, and you had to believe that something magical would happen.
Never had them.
Mikey?
Sorry.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
You guys have never heard of magic beans? Am I crazy?
I mean, other than Jack and the Beanstalk and...
No, hold on a second.
Jelly beans.
Whatever was in that chili.
Buy magic beans.
I'm looking up magic beans right now. Maybe it will jar my memory. Hold on.
Yeah.
Magic beans.
I mean, we don't have to just like let people who are listening to this wait around for us to Google magic beans. We could just, you know, pretend I never asked a dumb question and move on.
All right. Well, Billy Walters, some claim that he has spilled the beans here on Phil Mickelson. I don't think he did. I mean, everyone is kind of aware
did.
Of
he definitely
of
spilled the beans. What do you mean you don't think he did?
Well, Alan Shupnick did the book before, and we had the author on, kind of spilled the beans before Billy spilled the beans. But you're right, he spills the beans. You're right. I don't know what I'm doing here. You threw me off, Billy, because I can't... you know what? I don't know if you feel bad for Mickelson or you're disappointed in Walters for spilling the beans and using Mickelson.
Got to be honest with you, I don't know either. It's one of those that we'll talk to Billy and then we'll kind of figure out how we feel. We'll regroup and this is how we feel, you know?
All right.
Let's talk. Many beans.
So yeah. Many beans. Let's talk to Billy Walters about beans. Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Miller Lite. A lot's changed over the years. One thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So, what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. For me, it is simple. What I want out of my light beer is ice cold and great taste, and that's exactly what I get from the original light beer, Miller Lite. Miller Lite keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes like beer. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/stew, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Very excited to talk to this gentleman. His name is Billy Walters. He is the Michael Jordan of gambling. We'll get to that in a second. He also has a new book out, Gambler, Secrets from a Life at Risk. Billy, let's start right there with the book. And thank you for joining us, by the way. Why'd you decide to write this book?
Well, Stu, I'm not getting any younger. I'm 77 years old, and I wrote this book. It's an autobiography of my life. And I wanted to share this with people who are, you know, or pet issues with addiction, people who have problems in their life. And I'm also at a point in time in my life that, you know, legalized sports betting in the majority of the states in the United States has become a reality. And, you know, that's been my dream for a long time. And so in the book, I wanted to, everything that I know about sports betting and my experience, 100% of it's in the book. It's called The Masterclass. And I primarily wrote this, Stu, for average bettors. The Masterclass, the professional of the professionals, there's things in there for them also I think will help them. But I primarily wrote it for average bettors and people who are just beginning to bet sports because of the expansion of sports in the U.S. And I can see some things out there that I want to address in regards to that. I also went to federal prison. I was convicted of insider trading. I had a friend who I feel like betrayed me. And I was in prison. And, you know, although maybe like a lot of people, I thought I knew or understood something about prison. When I went to prison, what I realized was I knew nothing about prison. And I thought I knew what freedom meant. But until I went into prison, I never really knew what freedom meant either. And the men that I was in prison with, some of the things that I learned in regards to their lives and and things such as that. It was mind-boggling to me.
What'd you learn about prison that you didn't know before you went in?
Well, again, I thought I understood basic freedom, but once I got into prison, when you all of your freedom is completely taken away and you have none, I mean zero. I mean, when you're told what time to go to bed, when you're told what, you know, everything that it possibly is, and your choices in regards to, you know, even toothpaste, things like that, they're all taken away from you, Stu. And so, that's what I've learned about prison. Clearly, there's nothing good about prison. I'm not saying that we don't need prisons. There's people that clearly need to be in prison. But I met a lot of men in there that I mentor. And the thing that just absolutely brought me to my knees was I met men that had been in prison. Some of them as well as 25 years. And these men did not want to go back to prison under any circumstances. But I would spend a lot of one-on-one time with them, especially the closer they got to the door. And, it was traumatic for them because a lot of them didn't even know how to use the cell phones, too. But the thing that they feared the most, they had no way to make a living. They had no job skill whatsoever to make a living. The only thing they knew was a life of crime. And I think deep down they knew that in order to feed their families or survive, that's what they would probably have to do. And that's what really opened my eyes. And so when I got out of prison, I made sure, in my mind, I was going to make sure that I would do everything in my power to try to change things for people who actually deserve a second chance. I started working with Senator Harry Reid in Nevada, and he and I were working together, and my goal was to put vocational schools inside of federal prisons. And I offered to put up the first $1 million of my own money, and I wanted to put vocational schools in there for electricians, for plumbers, air conditioner repairman, and truck drivers. And unfortunately, Senator Reid, he passed away from pancreatic cancer, and we didn't get that done. But then I got introduced to a program in Las Vegas. It's called Hope for Prisoners. And I was introduced to it by the ex-sheriff of Clark County, which is Las Vegas. His name was Bill Young. And I met a guy named John Ponder. He started this organization in 2012. And I was blown away with how good this organization was. The recidivism rate for Hope for Prisoners, Stu, and they've been there since 2012, is 7%. So when I saw it, what it was, my dream was to put vocational schools in prison. So I worked with John and initially made some resources available. They expanded their facilities. But then most recently, we've worked with the governor of Nevada, Governor Joe Lombardo, and the head of corrections there, and we're now putting vocational schools in state prisons in Nevada, and so that is, I can't tell you how excited I am about that, and I'm just so proud to be associated with Hope for Prisoners.
Were you able to? I'm sure you were. Was there a lot of gambling going on in prison?
As far as I'm concerned, I knew there was some public gambling going on, but I wasn't remotely involved with it, frankly, and I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but whatever they were gambling for in prison, I would have had no interest in it to start with. That's number one. Number two, you can imagine I was a pretty high profile person in there.
Sure.
So I wanted to be about as far away from it as I could be. And then on top of that, on weekends, I had visitation every weekend I was there, Stu. Unlike a lot of these men, who 60% of the men in federal prisons, Stu, never get a visit. I mean, I realized how fortunate I was when I was in there. I had resources. I had lots of friends. I really didn't lose a friend because I went to prison, because most people who know me, they know my background. And my wife, at 47 years, she visited me almost every weekend, 99% of the time she was there, either Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So, the entire time I was in prison, I only watched one football game in its entirety. It was a Super Bowl. So when sports was being played, I was in visitation, number one. And number two, the last thing I wanted to do was be involved in any kind of prison gambling. But, yes, there was something going on.
So you watched a full Super Bowl in prison. They allow that in prisons. Just the game is that big that even prisoners can watch it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, we went to this big room, and they had TV set up in there, and you could bring food if you had food or whatever, and it was something that all the guys really enjoyed. They really got into it, and And it was the only time, it was once a year, but they did allow inmates to there were two Super Bowls. The first one I tried to watch, they cut it off before it was over. But the second one, then the second one, they played it in its entirety.
Why'd they cut it off, though? First off, which Super Bowl was it, and why'd they cut it off?
It was Philly and
the Raiders?
I was only in there for 31 months, so... I just remember there was one they cut off, and when they cut it off, they only cut it off about 2 minutes to go. Really, all the action took place in the last 2 minutes. So we not only missed the last part of the game, but it was the one that had the most action involved with it.
Why they cut it off, though? Like, was curfew, people getting out of hand? What happened?
No, people weren't getting out of hand. People were, you know, they were very orderly. In prison, you have counts at different times of the day, Stu. The prison I was in, at 4 o'clock every afternoon, you have to be standing by your bunk. At 9 o'clock every night, you have to be standing by your bunk. And then they do counts at 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, or 4 o'clock in the morning. And then on the weekends, they do a 10 o'clock a.m. count also. So the game was up against one of the counts, and instead of allowing it to run over and people get back, they call it because people had to be back in their barracks for count.
Got it. Billy, are you with me? Because gambling's, as you mentioned earlier, gambling's become mainstream, too mainstream for me. I miss the days where I would meet some guy in an alley, he'd hand me a bag of cash or I'd hand him a bag of cash. I want to feel like I'm about to get arrested. What do you think?
Well, here's what I think. I actually got arrested 4 times, and I got indicted 4 times for betting on ball games. Nothing more, nothing less. You know, I got arrested the first time in 1990. My wife of 47 years, I saw her taken out of the front of our home with handcuffs and leg irons on for betting on ball games. So I went through 4 indictments. I spent millions and millions of dollars. I prevailed on all 4 indictments because once the truth came out, I was exonerated. But the problem was there were a couple of things. The first indictment, I think law enforcement merely didn't understand the difference between organized bettors and organized bookmakers. We were the first group of organized bettors. After that, I think it kind of became a vindictive type of thing. And that was what happened. So from that perspective, Stu, I'm really glad to see that we have legalized sports betting, that hopefully nobody else gets arrested and taken out of their home and see their wives in that kind of condition for merely betting.
Right. No, I understand that. I just kind of miss those days, you know?
No, I miss them too. And I'll tell you the other part that I miss about it, Stu, and I think, you know, you've been around, I could see that, and I think you probably really relate to this. You know, back in those days, there were thousands of bookies throughout the United States, and, you know, small guys, and a lot of guys you could bet with. There were a lot of various options. Today, what's happened in legalized sports betting, there's some things that have been good about this, but the problem is we created a monopoly. You've only got a very small number of places that are actually bookmakers, and as a result, the customer, the resident of whatever state they're in, they're the ones that are really losing out because, you know, if you remember, Stu, back, it wasn't that long ago, 2-team parlays paid $1.80. They were 9-5.
Right.
Now 2-team parlays are 12-5. They're only paying you $2.60. And then, you know, 6-point teasers used to be even money. Now 6-point teasers, some of them charge as much as $1.30. Well, what's kind of happened here, what has happened here, you know, there's no truth in lending when it comes to advertising a price on a sporting event. And the fact of the matter is, one of the primary reasons I wrote this was because of the new and the average bettor. Most people, when they make a bet on a ball game, they're betting under the pretense they're laying $1.10 to $1. Well, that isn't the case. If you make a bet on a game, you know, a point spread of a game, that's the case. But if you're betting on parlays or teasers, you're laying as much as $1.35 on some of these games. You know, so essentially, the average bettor, bottom line is they've got very little chance of winning to start with. As a matter of fact, if they're one of these guys that has one place they're betting and they're not shopping around getting the best numbers and they don't understand anything at all about betting strategy, I'll just tell you they got no chance of winning. But, you know, that's another reason I wrote the book. In there, I put in a basic betting strategy. It's the same thing I've done my entire life. And that is get as many accounts as you can, shop around, and make sure you at least get the best number. And if you're going to buy half a point, I put all that information in there. You can see whatever half points worth, and what you got to find out is some half points are worth more than the other because certain points are more valuable than others. And then the other thing is I put in a comparison how point spreads compare to money lines. So in that way you can take a look at them and see which one is the best deal. And if you want to buy half a point, you know, if you can buy it for a fair amount of money or less, buy it. If you don't, you're better off passing. And the other thing I did, too, is I put a money management system in there because even if you're a recreational bettor, because you're a guy who's got a job, you love sports, you want to bet on sports, and, you know, you need to have some kind of a plan. But the other thing you need to be able to get a fair price on whatever you're betting on and have some sort of a strategy to do it. So that's, as I wrote in my book, early on in my life, I was addicted to gambling, and I went through some issues with it, and I shared that in the book. And fortunately for me, there are a number of things that happened. Number one, I married my wife 47 years ago. It was the best thing I ever did in my life. And I quit alcohol, and then I partnered up with a really smart guy that understood money management. And a combination of those things is that's how I was able to turn myself around. And again, my primary reason for writing this from a sports standpoint, it was for the beginning and average bettor.
The book is Gambler Secrets from a Life at Risk. I love to buy a hook. Like, I love to buy the half point down. My staff makes fun of me all the time, especially Mike Ryan. Am I an idiot for buying that half point?
No, you're not an idiot at all if you buy it at a fair price, you know. And in the books, Stu, you know, I put in a chart, and it shows you exactly what every half point is worth buying. And if you want to, you know, if you want to pay more than that, so be it. But you're instead of laying 11 to 10, you're laying more than 11 to 10. But I'll give you an example. The number three in NFL, okay? If you want to buy onto a tie, say the game's 2.5 and you want to take three, mm-hmm. that's worth 22 cents to buy, 22 extra cents. So it's worth 3 minus 32. If you're buying off of three and you want to go to 2.5 or you want to go to 3.5, that's worth 20 cents. So it tells you the exact, you know, fair value both ways. And then you make, if you can buy it for less than that, or you can buy it for that amount of money, you want to do it, go for it. If they want to charge you an extra 30 cents, like 3 minus 35 or 3 minus 40, it's a bad deal. You shouldn't do it. But every point in there, I put the true value of what the fair price is for half a point. And because honestly, Stu, I haven't been able to find any place yet that you can go and see how these things compare and what the equivalents are. That's the reason I put them in the book, because right now, it's amazing to me. Here we are. We've got millions of people betting sports. Everyone thinks they're laying 11 to 10, but they're involved in certain things. They're laying way more than 11 to 10, and they don't know it. That's the reason parlays and teasers are the most profitable things that these sports books have, because, again, they're getting $1.30, $1.35 on a lot of these bets. And the public doesn't know that. Now, if you know, you're laying $1.35 and you want to do it, fine, go do it. You know, you're not, you know, the chances you win are much, much less, but at least now you know. You know what the fair price is. You're no longer, I would say, flying an airplane in the dark. You know, you know exactly where you're going.
Billy, the thing that we make fun of with Stu Gatz is that he will buy down.
Here we go. A couple of Billy's cutting it up. Here we go.
He'll buy down something from like 2 to 1.5 or something, right? And then he'll give his prediction for the game, and he's like, the team's going to win by 8. And we're like, well, why are you buying down half points if you're so convinced that they're going to blow out the other team? It seems like you're wasting money.
Well, I better leave that one alone. It sounds like you guys. But I will say this. I don't ever recall buying one from 2 to 1.5, but if it were cheap enough, I would. And that's the reason I put the
– I never do that, Billy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, but, you know, if the price were to be cheap enough, it would actually – you'd have value doing that. But the numbers, you know, most of us look at are 3s and 7s and 10s. And, you know, if the game's 6.5, clearly you want to take 7. If the game's 9.5, you want to take 10. And I've also put in the order, I've put the most important numbers there in order, like, you know. And so I'll give you an example. 3. A team is favored in the NFL by 3. They'll win that game. They're going to win that game a much larger. They're going to win that game about 12. They're going to win that game exactly about 3.8% of the time. So you stop and think about it. Miami's 3 over Buffalo, or any other set of circumstances. Whoever's a 3-point favorite, 8% of the time they're going to win that game by 3 points. So you can see how important 3 is.
Very important. How much money have you bet today, Billy?
I haven't bet anything today on sports.
Same.
In regards to the book, I've been doing a few interviews with that, and I'm in New York. I'm a little bit under the weather, but I can tell you it's not going to be long until Toll meets leather, and I'll be in action.
Of course you are. You're the Michael Jordan of gambling. How does it feel to be called the Michael Jordan of gambling?
Well, I'm honored to say the least, and if I can fill those shoes, I tell you what, that's quite an honor is really all I can say.
Pretty damn cool. I want to get to your relationship here with Phil in just a second, but I am wondering, what is the worst bet you've ever made, Billy?
I tell you, I made so many bad ones, I can't remember them all, Stu, but, you know, after the fact, there's a lot of them look really bad, before the fact, I can't think of any really bad ones I made, but after the fact, there were a ton of them.
Sure. What's the most you've won in a single night, or single day?
I don't know exactly, but at least $4 or $5 million.
Jesus Christ. Billy's face right
Wait
there.
A minute. I don't Not know exactly four or five.
My Billy.
Wait a minute. Wait.
Well, I told a story in the book. I bet $3.5 million on New Orleans when they were playing the Colts in the Super Bowl. But earlier in the year, I bet I won an extra $2 million on them to win the Super Bowl. So when that game was over, I won $3.5 million in the straight bet I made. But the future bets, by them winning, I also won those. So it was a total of $5.5 million, and that would have been the one.
Jesus. What's the most you've lost in a day? Same number, same roughly?
In sports, I don't know. I probably, $2.5 million, $3 million. I've had some bad days. I'll tell you a quick story. Anyway, I don't want to take up your time with it, but there was one Sunday, and I had a really bad Sunday, and I actually had a home in Bonita Springs, Florida at the time, and it had been raining. It was overcast, and I'd had a real back injury, and I was taking some muscle relaxers and things for the pain, and the day was over, and I got clean sheeted. I lost almost every game. And so I told my wife, I said, look, I got to get out and take a walk. So I walked down to the end of the street and came back. I could only walk about a half a block. Well, I passed my house up, went to the house two doors down, went up and opened the door and went in. But that was the day that, again, between, I guess, getting clean sheeted and the back and the muscle relaxers, that's a day I'll never forget.
Go ahead, Billy.
Do you see people like Mattress Mac? I think this guy, Mattress Mac, a bit of a clown.
Mattress Quack. I mean,
guys betting like $10 million on a game, and it seems like these things are with no rhyme or reason whatsoever. Loses all kinds of money. Doesn't seem to matter whatsoever to him.
Well, from what I understand, I really don't know all the facts, but he's using this to promote his business, and he makes these bets, and if he wins, the people who buy products from him, they get those for free, and if they don't, they pay whatever the normal price is. At least that's my understanding. And as a result, he's promoting himself. The casino sportsbooks, they want to promote him because they want there to be more Mattress Max. And he's got a lot of publicity. He seems like a really nice guy. But I think his betting is it's more of promoting his business than it is him actually betting. At least that's what he said, and that's what I understand.
How about this Felica guy, the Bear? He told us that, a hard 9 on the unders, for corner kicks at the World Cup final, and it went way over. I mean, he's not good at this, is he?
No.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know him. So,
You're not missing off, much, right? Let me tell you. Yeah.
he's costing me money, Billy.
What about Drake? What do you think about Drake's sports bets?
I only know about what I read, and I've read a couple, three things about those, and seems like he likes to play, and looks like he plays high. So, but yeah. I don't know much about his success or failure.
The new book is out. It's fascinating. Your story is fascinating, Billy. Gambler, Secrets from a Life at Risk. I'm certain you've heard Chris Russo by now. What'd you make of Russo getting upset? I mean, just taking a flamethrower to you, Billy, because he feels like you used Phil Mickelson to sell a book.
Well, evidently, Mr. Russo didn't read my book. First of all, any and all the money that I earned from the book, 100% of it's going to charity. And secondarily, anyone who knows me, I don't need to make any money from the book. I did this book for the reasons that I pointed out. And if he knew the facts in regards to mine and Phil's relationship, he could understand why I had to explain it in the book. I believe I would have never gone to prison if Phil had came forward and testified. While I was in prison, my daughter committed suicide. So if he read the book, I think he would probably understand a little clearer what my motivation was for writing the book, whether it be my early childhood, my early gambling career when I was addicted to the four indictments that I went through for being a better, and then going to federal prison. If he reads the details of that, I think he'll see pretty clearly why I wrote it, and he'll understand if he reads the book that I didn't need Phil Mickelson's to help me sell any books.
Have you heard from Phil?
No, sir. Well, since I got out of prison, I heard from him one time. I was at a club that we're both members at, and I was hitting balls on the range, and I was headed to my cart. And he walked up to me with a big smile on his face. And this was the first time I'd seen him since I'd gotten out of prison. I didn't hear from him one time in prison, even when my daughter committed suicide. And he walks up and he said, "Oh, it's so good to see you. I'm so glad you're back playing golf." And we had a few other private words, and that was the last time I've spoken to him. And probably it will be the last time we'll speak.
If you wouldn't mind, Billy, I'd love for you to explain the nature of your relationship with Phil. Like the first time you met him, what was your impression of him? How'd you guys get connected?
I played in the AT&T in 2006, and I'd made the cut, and I was playing on Sunday. My partner was Freddie Jacobson, and Phil was playing with Steve Lyons, who was with Ford Motor Company at the time, one of his sponsors. And the entire round of golf, he talked to me the entire round. It was nothing. It was all about sports. And it was clear he knew who I was. And, of course, I knew who he was. And I never saw him again until 2008. And I played in the Wachovia Championship. I was invited there by Wachovia Bank because I was a client. And I played in the Pro-Am with Jim Furyk. And I came in after the round. I walked into the locker room. And Phil approached me again. And he said, "I understand you do partnerships." And I said, "Yeah, I do partnerships with lots of people under certain circumstances." And I explained to him what they were. And then afterward, we developed a partnership. It was a betting partnership that lasted 5 years. We had a friendship, but I felt like we were friends for 8 years. And, I think I'm a pretty good judge of character. And I think that's probably what disappointed me and hurt me the worst is, I thought he, first of all, I thought he was a stand-up guy. I've been around him enough, and I thought he was a stand-up guy. I really did. And then this issue came up with this investigation in the Southern District of New York, an insider trading. In that court case, the biggest mistake I made in retrospect, after playing 31 months of Monday Morning Quarterback, I wish I'd have testified, but I didn't. And I can explain to you why I didn't. When the trial was coming to an end with the prosecution, there was only one witness against me. And this guy, his name was Tom Davis. 2 years before this, he had voluntarily met with the SEC and the FBI and told them emphatically I did not give him any insider information. After that, they learned he had embezzled money from a better women's charity, he had filed a fraudulent tax return, and he'd actually given someone else insider information. So 2 years later, he and his lawyer, they the Southern District, so he goes up there and he gets a former prosecutor and he makes a deal with the Southern District. It took him 29 meetings with the FBI and the Southern District to get their story straight. Okay, that was the only witness that there was against me. Okay, prior to going to New York, I knew every fact about the case I was involved with. I may not be the smartest guy in the world, but I'm not stupid. If I'd been guilty, or I thought I was guilty, I would have plea bargained. I would have paid a fine. I would have taken a reduced sentence. I wouldn't have been a rat, but I would have done those things and saved some money and possibly not got as much time as I did. I went there. I've been in federal court a number of times, and I thought I understood that process as my lawyer from Las Vegas did. We really didn't understand how things worked in federal court in the Southern District. And but once we got there, the lawyers who were representing me, which toward the end of the trial, they said, look, we have 23 witnesses to call, and including me. And they said, look, we've got this case won. This guy has no credibility. And they were right about that. I watched it every day. They caught the guy in at least 25 lies. And they said, if the jury can't believe this guy, they cannot convict you. And so I agreed with them. It was my choice. It was my final choice. I said, okay, we've been in trial for 3.5 weeks. They stopped the trial on multiple occasions. People were sleeping. One of the jurors had said next week he was out of there. He had something he had to go do. The weather had been horrible, and there was a holiday weekend coming up, and so that was a decision we made. I didn't testify. We wrapped it up. Bottom line is, you can't believe him. There's no way you can convict Mr. Walters. Here what the facts are. Well, anyway, the prosecutors, frankly, I think they did a much better job of trying the case than my lawyers did. Out of the 10 trades that I made, there were 4 trades in those 10 trades I made that were suspicious looking. And if you didn't understand the background detail in those trades, I could see if those questions weren't answered, how someone could think there was something there. But the guy who was alleged all these things, they caught him in 25 lies. I owned this stock off and on for 10 years. And there was nothing I did with this stock that I hadn't done with 100 other stocks, including the amount of money I invested. I owned a stock for 10 years. I never shorted a stock one time. This guy was on the board of another publicly traded company at the same time, a company called Affirmative Insurance. I sold my last 500,000 shares of stock in that company for 1 cent after it went bankrupt. And this man's supposed to be giving me inside information. So anyway, that's what the facts were. In retrospect, like I said, And you haven't asked me this, but here's what I really think happened. You know, I was portrayed to the jury. I was a wealthy guy from Las Vegas who had a private airplane, who had multiple homes, and they didn't know me. I never got up. I never testified. They never understood me, my background, or how I got to where I got to. And I think there was a certain amount of resentment there because, again, I was a wealthy guy. I had a private airplane and multiple homes, regardless of how I got them. There were just, I think there was some of that also that was probably involved.
Billy, one word to describe Phil Mickelson. You have one word. I know it's a tough spot, but what word are you going with?
Disingenuous.
Really? Okay. How much money did you take from Phil?
I really didn't take any money from Phil. Phil and I made money together. We were partners betting sports, and we made money until the bookmakers cut us off. And then,
How much did Phil make off of you, Billy?
Well, that part I don't know. I mean, he might have made, I'm just guessing, I don't know, a couple million bucks or something, but I don't know the exact number.
But you guys were winning so much as a team that the bookmaker started to cut you off, is what you're saying.
Well, what happened? He had these accounts before I started betting the accounts. And I thought I understood his pattern because he explained it to me. But later on, after the fact, what I learned was his pattern, he was making a lot more bets than I originally thought. He was doing some things that, you know, a bookmaker could recognize the difference between what he was doing and what I was doing. We kept the accounts for, I don't know, 6-8 months. And then finally the bookmakers told him, you know, we're closing these accounts down. But if you want to come back and start betting this, you're welcome to anytime. And he did after we discontinued our partnership with those two bookmakers. He opened up an account with another bookmaker that he'd had for some period of time that was a dormant one after we lost those two, and we continued on with our partnership.
Fascinating stuff. New book, Gambler, Secrets from a Life at Risk. Billy Walters, who is the Michael Jordan of gambling, joining us here on Stupidity. A final question for you, because we are amateur gamblers. We are bad. I buy hooks when it's 1.5 just to get it down to 1, and then I pick the team by 8, as Billy pointed out earlier. Your best bet, like season totals, wins, team to the Super Bowl, Billy Walters' 2 best bets headed into the NFL season.
Well, again, as I go into the book, to me, it's all about value, and I do handicapping. And the way it works with me, Stu, is I come up with a prediction of my own, and I bet my opinion against the bookmaker's opinion. And what the two best bets are, I can't tell people in general what their two best bets are because that's not just what I do. I don't sell picks, and I'm not trying to hustle people. So all I would tell you is do your homework. And a couple other things, Stu. To me, if you're betting sports, I think you need to set aside how much money you can afford to bet. You need to come up with a betting strategy. You need to come up, follow the money management system, and don't chase losses because you're a loser. I mean, don't let your emotions take over because you lost three games on Sunday you like, and there's one Sunday night you got no opinion at all, but you're stuck and you're going to double up, catch up. So that's the kind of stuff that will really get you in trouble. And
Billy, you have never, after a long Saturday of losing, you've never bet the Hawaii Rainbows? Because I'm telling you, you haven't lived unless you've done it. I mean,
I bet on the Hawaii Rainbows a lot of times, and I've been up real late at night watching the bowls, but I never did it because I was a loser.
Right. I did it. Everything you actually liked the game, right?
Yeah, I like the game, and the bowls were fun to watch.
Yep. All right, Billy, we appreciate the time. It's a fascinating story. On the way out here, please promote your book. Sell the book. Why should people buy this?
Thank you. You guys are my kind of guys. Thank you very much.
What do you mean by that, Billy?
I mean, you actually know, what you're talking about. You guys are guys, and you're a lot of fun to be with. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate that. Feel better. Gambler, Secrets from a Life at Risk. Billy Walters, you've done a tremendous job selling this book, okay? Because I don't read, but I'm kind of into this, okay? So excellent job by you, sir. Feel better. We appreciate the time.
Thank you, Stu. Good luck to you guys.
Stu Gatz here from my friends over at Miller Lite. A lot's changed over the years. One thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So, what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. For me, it is simple. What I want out of my light beer is ice cold and great taste, and that's exactly what I get from the original light beer, Miller Lite. Miller Lite keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most, a light beer that tastes like beer. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Stu, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.